What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind the Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Yes, it is the all-Canadian edition of Rewind to Dynamite from Toronto to Vancouver. John Pollock and Bruce Lord here just days after our big federal election that the whole world is in awe of.
It was quite the evening. It was very much one of those nights where I was happy to kind of, you know, just drink an extra coffee or whatever, stay up and see how things shook out. But I don't know if people's reactions to this Dynamite will be less contentious or less split if we sort of talk about, you know, how Canada has sort of responded to the new political realities or the continuing political realities that we enjoy in this country versus, I would say, John, a pretty positive tilt, a pretty positive shift in kind of the state of the union of AEW that we've had over the last few weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with tonight's Dynamite and how it performed as well in Norfolk, Virginia. For those that are listening here on the YouTube channel, if you jump on and get the XL version of this show at postwrestlingcafe.com, Bruce and I just spent almost a half hour going over all the news of the day, including the headliner. It's Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff's new project, Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Also a preview of the Best of the Super Juniors participants and cards that have been released so far. Wrestling Dontaku this weekend featuring Tetsuya Naito's farewell and Noah's card as well, happening at Ryogoku Kokugigan Sumo Hall this coming Saturday as well, with Kenta going for the GHC Championship. All that can be found on the XL version. And after the review, we're chatting about the Dark Side of the Ring episode on Eddie Gilbert. So now we get into tonight's edition of Dynamite. So let's talk about this. The final WrestleTix number was 3,794, mm-hmm. which on the surface, like, that's a number that it's not anything to stop the presses over, but that is the highest attendance for a Dynamite this year, and they were at about 2,200 a week ago. So, yes, you can look at it of, you know, Hangman Page, it's in Virginia, but I think as well, I think that all-star eight-man tag and getting that really hyped up on Saturday during Collision when they had that huge lead-in and announced that match immediately with the dynamic of Okada and Omega, I have to say that's probably one of the few instances this year of a match that really moved tickets in this last week that led to, you know, nearly 4,000 people, which for an AEW TV show, like 4,000 is like that's a very good number for an AEW TV taping these days.
It is, and it's up about 15% or 18%, something in that neighborhood, from when they ran the Chartway Arena last year. So, you know, you and Way and Brandon and a lot of people have been talking about how, okay, the critical or the you know, kind of the popular reception to the quality of AEW over the last few months, fine, we've seen a real uptick in that. That has not really in a substantive way yet translated into you know, ratings or into live attendance. This is one show. I don't want to make too much of it, but, you know, if we are sort of kind of talking about that general word of mouth, the vibes check, you know, in terms of the AEW fandom, beginning to sort of swell up and kind of go through a little bit of a buoying, maybe we are going to be seeing a little bit of an uptick there. Obviously, you know, again, it's one example. We can't make too much of it. But I would be really interested to see if that does continue over the next couple of weeks.
And what's been sort of your attitude towards AEW the last couple of months and what it's experiencing right now? Like, is it consistent with sort of those vibes that you're citing here? Like, how do you feel the, like, compare this to kind of the last couple of months of 2024, where it felt like that was a low point, and contrast that to present?
Yeah, I don't know that I ever got quite as down on the product as some folks, or at least a certain percentage, a vocal percentage of the audience did. I was a little bit disappointed in the fact that the whole Death Riders business never really coalesced into kind of the existential threat to the company that it sort of seemed to be pointing towards, and instead just kind of became a heel stable, kind of like the Don Callis family and whatnot. But, you know, the fact that that was sort of there at the top of the card, you know, it was a little bit of an impingement on things. But I'm very, very high on things right now. I think the afterglow of that all-time episode 2 weeks ago that, you know, was like one of the, I don't know, two or three best episodes of Dynamite there's ever been, I think that's kind of sticking around. You know, that's been present on Collision, which has been really, really enjoyable over the last couple of weeks. I think everything with this whole reinvigorated heel version of FTR feels really good, really interesting, and very kind of classic, territorial heel tag team. The Bucks look very invigorated, I thought, last week. I know some of us were kind of concerned about, okay, the EVP characters are sort of sticking around, but certainly the match, you know, sort of felt like they had something to prove. The Callis family is being presented as something very strong, but also legitimately hateable. And even as a Toni Storm skeptic, I've enjoyed the small adjustments that they have made to her presentation. The women's division feels strong. We just had that incredible Athena Mercedes match. And I think, you know, if we can kind of fold today's episode in, we've now had three very, very good to fantastic Dynamites just in the last little while.
Yeah, and I think that this has been a year where the Owen Hart Cup has kind of been your, like, it's been both tournaments, I think, have been received very well, and it's given you kind of this story over the last couple of weeks of just following this tournament, and now we're down to the finals being set up for Double or Nothing. But kicking things off is the All-Star 8-Man that they promoted all weekend. Kenny Omega, Mark Briscoe, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Kevin Knight taking on Kazuchika Okada, the Young Bucks, and Ricochet, which, if you were living under a rock, Excalibur reminded you, this is the first time that Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada have been in a match together in AEW. And they tease this right at the beginning. They're getting into each other's face, and Okada's just circling and tags out to Nick. And they're just going to let you wait and wait for the two to touch. So Omega gets jumped after turning his back, and they got the heat on him for quite some time. They were noting the history between the Briscoes and the Bucks when Mark was in there. And we get into a 8-person standoff. Bailey and Briscoe come together with double crane kicks, and then Bailey gets beaten down for several minutes here. After there is a somersault senton delivered to the midsection of Kenny Omega, he is draped on the edge. We go to our second commercial break, and when we come back, Omega avoids a springboard 450 from Ricochet, tags Briscoe, and we see the baby faces fly to the floor, including a golden triangle from Bailey. Okada gets the advantage, gives the middle finger to the camera, and then to Omega. And Bailey comes in, and he literally kicks the middle finger away from Okada. And everyone is in the ring. We get a series of offense here. Okada sends Bailey into the corner, and finally, Omega and Okada start to go at it. And Omega is instantly going for the one-winged angel, which Okada avoids, but is hit with the snap dragon suplex, and Okada hits his drop kick. And after a rainmaker is ducked, the Bucks are into super kick Kenny. So they just like dangled it for you and making you want more of Omega and Okada, which is how this should have been structured. Yep. The EVP trigger misses when Briscoe ducks, and then the Briscoe ducks a rainmaker hitting the J driller, and it's Ricochet in to break up the cover. And we get into the final minute or so here when Knight drop kicks Ricochet off the back of Bayley, who does a backflip off the shoulders, landing on the Bucks on the floor to set up the Terminator dive from Kenny Omega. Tremendous sequence here at the end. And Ricochet shoves Mark Briscoe off the top, preventing the Froggy Bow, and he is left prone for the Rainmaker, and Okada pinning Mark Briscoe in 26 minutes and 25 seconds. Commercial free if you were watching on Triller.
It flew right by. I am willing to bet that as he was watching this, Damien Abraham was very happy that you hadn't taken him up on his offer of letting him take over play-by-play for tonight. Yeah, if you were getting to listen to it on Trill, I'm not exactly sure what was on the break audio and on the main audio. And a lot of very, if you're into it, you know, the goofy Taz break audio on this episode. But at one point, Excalibur said, you know, you don't have to go to Reseda for this one, or, you know, wait 5 months for a DVD to show up, as the case may be.
Sometimes longer.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. But that was it, right? It was a great combination of both. Look at all of this talent. Consider the fact that basically every single one of them, with the exceptions of Knight and Okada, do have that, you know, PWG connection and those roots. The first half of this match, apart from the initial, you know, Kenny and Okada stare off, was basically that. It was a party, fun, classic PWG style spot fest. What is all of the stuff that we can do? What are the incredible feats of athleticism that Kevin Knight can do that nobody else can do? But then, as you were getting towards the expected, you know, very brief Omega Okada sequence, they did have, you know, kind of just some more like hard hitting and semi-serious sort of work for a couple of minutes, kind of, I think, to clear the deck for that Omega Okada sequence. Yeah, you know, as I didn't even realize this until going into this episode, but I was actually physically at the last match that Okada and Omega would have been on opposite sides of way back in 2018. At a Long Beach show. And then, of course, you know, they were in that very crazy 2023 New Year's Dash match where they were tagging against Cobb and Hanare. So, yeah, obviously cashing in on not just the New Japan history, the PWG history, but also I think the fact that new additions like Knight and Bayley felt very much of a piece here. The crowd responded to them, even if you were not somebody who knew about Mike Bailey's history in PWG, you understood how he fit into this milieu. The crowd reacted to Knight's signature moves in the way that you could really hope for, you know, given that he's only been in the company for a month or something like that. I think I ended up liking this, you know, more than the previous week's Bucks match. Maybe it was just that more Gonzo party vibe. Maybe it was because more guys on Omega and Okada's level kind of shows up, you know, the fact that Knight and Bayley do seem, you know, didn't fade into the background at all. And like I said earlier, I think that the Bucks kind of feel like they have something to prove after the hiatus and a preceding run, which people didn't have too much good to say about after the Sting match. So yeah, everybody absolutely bringing their A game for a match that just flew right by for me.
I mean, I thought this was, it was an excellent match. And, you know, it's funny because we went over the best of the Super Juniors blocks, and as much as I'm looking forward to seeing Kevin Knight in that tournament, there's part of me that I think they've done such a tremendous job of introducing him in AEW. It's the furthest thing from Get Lost in the Shuffle. He has had a position. Yep. He's been thrown in with the big dogs, and he really feels like he's got a role in AEW. They've given him like opportunities to speak, and he's going to be gone for a month. And I just hope that when he comes back, he can pick up where they've left off, because I think he's come in and he is, like, we've just seen that so many times in AEW. It's a great signing, but then, you know, 6 weeks later, where is that person? And so far with Kevin Knight, I just think they've just done a great job with him. And you've got this lingering issue with Ricochet, too.
To go back to kind of one of mine and Karen's repeated hobby horses from the New Japan shows, one of our complaints is always when you have these interesting tournament runs happening by AEW wrestlers in Japan that are basically never mentioned on AEW programming. Not to jump too far ahead, but that was definitely not the case with one of our other Best of the Super Juniors participants on this episode of Dynamite. So that maybe gives me some hope that they'll maybe do some course correcting about that. And God forbid, you know, we get like a little, you know, 1 minute, just 20 seconds of Excalibur saying, hey, here's what Kevin Knight and Nick Wayne got up to, you know, last week, you know, in Ryogoku or in Korakuen or whatever the case may be. Yeah.
The Hurt Syndicate are backstage. There's a bunch of extras just acting like total geeks here, singing their song, and in total babyface fashion, they just beat the shit out of these guys. Good riddance. And MJF, they have a discussion about MJF joining, and MVP and Shelton are trying to talk Lashley into getting his vote, and says if he screws us over, we'll hurt him worse than he's ever been hurt before. So we're leaving the idea that Lashley is reassessing his vote.
I like the fact that there was the line that that Shelton had about like this is about us trusting MVP, not just about trusting Max. Like, I like the way that the focus is not just on MJF, but it's kind of allowing us as viewers to get a sense of the internal dynamics and motives of individual members of the Hurt Syndicate, who they are, what they want, what's driving them. It isn't just this kind of, you know, MJF versus them, or MJF versus Bobby Lashley.
The ops, which Powerhouse Hobbs, now an official op with Katsuyori Shibata and Samoa Joe, murdered the returning Nick Comoroto, who's been out since last August, Rhett Titus and Miles Hawkins. We had Shibata and Comoroto trading chops, and then Hawkins is in. Hobbs just murders him with clotheslines and a spinebuster. 3 minutes and 4 seconds, pretty quick work here. And then to set up the Death Riders running in, they got into a big brawl with Joe, placing Moxley in the Coquina clutch, but leaving Shibata in the ring with Claudio, who hit a neutralizer to Shibata on the chair. And Joe runs back into the ring, letting go of the choke on Moxley. And as the Death Riders are exiting, Joe calls him a bitch, and he wants their match at Beach Break in 2 weeks to now be a steel cage match, which it will now be.
The enunciation or pronunciation of John brought, you know, had me flashing back to Wendy, because, you know, man, nobody is more credible and terrifying on the mic than Joe. I thought like this was a nice little bit. I mean, again, we can sort of say, what sort of a chance does Joe actually, do we think Joe has of actually defeating Mox? Not much, but I thought that this was a good little simple way of adding some heat to that match that we are going to get in a couple of weeks. In terms of the actual match itself, I think Hobbs once again fits in very, very well in this mix. You know, there's been a lot of talk, you know, you were just kind of hinting at it there about kind of, you know, which company benches who and whatnot. And you can sort of on the one hand say, ah, geez, how can you not have had a plan or a program for someone like Will Hobbs, who was just sitting there, you know, waiting for an injury. But he worked really, really well here. I understand that the company is going to give Hook a lot of rope. But when you have somebody like a Will Hobbs ready to Wally Pip you for your spot, when you have your Fletchers and your Knights very much on the rise, I do sort of wonder. I mean, I'm assuming the Shibata thing is to leave the spot open for Hook to return. There's been talk in the past, right, about whether Hook would benefit from some sort of an excursion or whatever it might be. And I think, again, when you compare him to some of the other young talent that is really beginning to grab the spotlight, there is still something missing there.
Yeah, I've felt the same way for Hook. Like, I think that there's just such a depth of talent that I think for him, like, it's a very high bar to have like a weekly position on AEW television.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelley Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelley creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forest. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Renee did her sit down with Mercedes Moné. She is a global champion and states that, and she is asked if she is underestimating Jamie Hayter, but then Moné gives her resume and she is undefeated, the best champion, and calls her a cartoon, that being Jamie Hayter.
Backstage promos are not Mercedes's strong suit. I thought this type of a sit down, she felt a lot more comfortable in and a lot more organic. I wasn't nuts about the fact that she sort of switched away from, like, you know, focusing on her achievements in the company and around the world. And then, oh, here's just a couple of little catty comments about Hayter's outfits. I felt like that was kind of that's what we don't want in this sort of a program, especially with somebody of Hayter's caliber. But like I said, this felt like a bit of a step up in Mercedes in terms of speaking segments.
Yeah. Do you get the sense that they are directing you towards, you know, All In being the clash of the two big champions in Storm and Mercedes? Because it does feel like Athena has just sort of been put to the side at this point. Like, I don't know if that's this option that they're just holding on to in their back pocket.
Yeah, I the presentation of Hayter has been mixed. It's been a little bit better than the last time before she got that, whatever that other injury was that put her on the shelf for a little bit of a while. On the one hand, like, I do think that theoretically that path sets you up for more interesting things to do, like an Athena Mercedes, you know, match again or whatever it might be. I just don't know that enough has been done with Hayter to then make her feel like a legitimate threat to Tony at this point. And obviously we could get there. You know, there's time between Double or Nothing and Texas.
Renee then interviews the Patriarchy with the mention here that Nick Wayne is going to the Best of the Super Juniors, and Christian Cage answers for Nick. And with that, Jay Lethal walks in. We almost needed an identifier here for Jay Lethal, okay, so we're new viewers here. And basically, he lays out a challenge to Nick Wayne to, as the longest reigning ROH World Television Champion, to face the current one. And Wayne doesn't have his gear. He's not ready. But Cage accepts on his behalf. So that's going to be happening later as he tells Nick Wayne to get his head in the game. Timeless Toni Storm and Miyu Yamashita coming off her blood sport and a very busy WrestleMania week schedule. There were highlights of Storm at the TCM Film Festival. And the match begins, and Storm early on misses a hip attack on the edge of the apron and is caught in the corner as Miyu starts literally kicking her in the ass from the floor until Luther removes her and Storm is able to recover. We get a leaping Enziguri out of the corner by Miyu, and Excalibur theorizes that, you know, this is an eliminator match and it could be Miyu Yamashita defending the women's title at All In Texas. And there's this silence, and Taz, with not an ounce of sincerity in his response, just says, could happen. Yeah, I guess that could happen. It was just the most, that's not a prayer of happening. Yeah. Excalibur, I know you're trying to get this eliminator across, but this really picked up. They had a really, like, Miyu's strikes looked really strong in this match, from the forearms, the kicks that she was delivering, and Storm would just eventually get an advantage with various Germans that she used. Finally hits the hip attack, but then runs into this perfectly timed spinning wheel kick, and she just drops to the mat. Miyu hits a DVD and a head kick, but then Storm stops her with another German and hip attack combo, hits the Storm Zero in 9 minutes and 23 seconds, where they note she is 10-0 in eliminator matches as they set up for another eliminator on Saturday, where she will face Lady Frost and she will be 11-0.
This got really good down the the last little stretch of it, all the striking and the suplexes in the last few minutes looked excellent. Like I said before, since the Mariah May match, I feel as though they have found ways of still continuing Tony's character and working it into matches in a way that does not feel nearly as like kind of world breaking or whatever. It's not at the expense of the actual wrestling. She's just kind of adjusted the character she's kind of a ribald old timey dame who has a lascivious interest in her opponents. But I wanted to say there was that we got a very quick Ian Riccoboni voiced vignette for Yamashita off of the top, just in That's case right. you're one yeah. of these people who, you know, is panicking anytime, you know, you see a wrestler on television you haven't seen before. But if you are somebody who had not seen Yamashita on television before, I think you would have been really impressed with the things that have made her who she is, her incredibly tough striking. I don't know if I should really say this in public. I was texting Karen a few days ago when I was watching Yamashita have her TJPW match with Mizuki over Mania weekend, saying, I'm not going to say this publicly because I don't need, you know, Joshi diehards coming for me, but Yamashita's style is one that I enjoy so much, but it just, there does not ever seem to be people in TJPW that sort of meet her at that level. Like the house style of TJPW is just so different from that. And like, I'll tune into TJPW to watch her matches. But often they're with opponents that I just cannot take credibly or seriously. Again, I don't necessarily need, you know, smoke from the from Joshi diehards, but I do sometimes wish that Yamashita was in Stardom, Marigold, God forbid, even a U.S. company or something like that, where she could have, you know, the sort of hard hitting, hard slugging matches that she's clearly capable of excelling at.
And I think it was very clear that she got a lot of attention off the Natalya match. Just the fact that they, you know, a blood sport match that was kind of like this character driven one too, just with like the middle fingers at the beginning and playing it up as a grudge as opposed to just the mutual respect that blood sport kind of leans on for most of its matches.
The silliness of the sharpshooter finisher aside, everything else about that I did enjoy. Yeah.
Yes. Well, we've got to marry the two worlds.
Yep.
Mercedes comes out and just states that she is coming for Tony's title after she beats Jamie Hayter, to which Jamie Hayter comes out and says, I guess disagrees with this. And she just comes out and just nails Mercedes, who runs away, and Hayter stares at Tony Storm. So they are doing a good job here of trying to make compelling arguments, which I think you can look at both options as believable ones, with Mercedes or Jamie Hayter going to face Tony.
That's what I would, I was just thinking, like, as soon as I heard Mercedes, music playing, I'm like, it makes sense for her, right? In storyline, for her to be looking past Hayter and just kind of immediately just casting her eye towards Tony and everything. So I loved the fact that they just had Hayter go like, F that, you're not looking past me, and I'm just going to clean your clock right here.
It was good and it was simple. And then Tony just rocked out to Jamie Hayter's theme.
Yes.
The Callis family is backstage. Callis put over the Takeshita and Josh Alexander match with Brody King and Ospreay last week as one of the best tag matches ever. And they're going to make history again tonight when Fletcher beats Hangman and then goes on to beat Ospreay at Double or Nothing. And Fletcher cut his promo saying that after he wins tonight, they will have to say my full name.
I'm still trying to figure out what the what the whole full name is with him. There's also the fact that Nick Wayne's theme song reiterates like five times that I'm Nick Wayne. My name is Nick Wayne. I don't know if this is just, you know, kind of modern forms of like algorithmic branding that are telling people that it's important that you get both first and last names drilled into people's heads. If nothing else, like, you know, Callis was great here just as the completely unlikable, completely shrill manager that he's continuing to do a fantastic job of.
Yes. Kyle Fletcher, it is still, you look at this guy from like 3 years ago to now, I don't think you would even recognize that he is the same person.
It's physically like it's all come along, but like, I don't know, like going, like you go back and watch those RevPro matches and there's hints of that greatness in there. I was very, very excited.
I'm stating for the physique, which is, has acquired its own zip code in this time.
Yeah, no.
The Hurt Syndicate segment, they come out and they invite MJF to the ring. And once again, we're going to go to the polls, Bruce. And Benjamin, thumbs up. MVP, thumbs up. And Bob we get to. And MJF is not happy with him, asking about his car ride here after he got his ride jacked last week. And Bobby Lashley, you have never seen a man milk thumbs up or down as much as he did here. He's like wavering back and forth. And this crowd, like, they are excited to see where this man's thumb goes. And he tilts it up before turning it down. And the crowd is so sad. And MJF just loses it. He says, "I'm so sick of your shit." And then proceeds to say, "What do I need to get you? Rogaine? Because you're bald." It's like that. I guess we're just like just copying from other heels to take their insults and apply them here to a group of three bald men that he is trying to impress. And with that, Lashley presses MJF into the corner and says, "If you want to impress me, we're the Hurt Syndicate. Hurt somebody."
I know you and Wei don't really use episode titles for these reviews anymore, but I couldn't help but think that "What About Bob" would be a really good title this one. At one point, Tony Schiavone said that he'd never seen so much drama in a thumb, clearly not familiar with the oeuvre of Steve Odenkirk. But yeah, no, I liked this. I liked the actual closing of the loop here on MVP's advice to MJF a couple of weeks ago. Find out what people want and give it to them. Right. He has been going with, you know, the watches, the women, the cars, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And I liked this little kind of turn of just, you know, Lashley wanting to see that MJF could be taken seriously as a violent threat on the level that this group positions and presents themselves as. I have to say, I wasn't necessarily expecting that. But the second he said it, I thought, that's a perfect, perfect way to kind of take this kind of will they, won't they sort of back and forth that's been going on here. I also saw somebody else theorizing that this was maybe the direction that things seem to be going with Ricochet and the Hurt Syndicate back around November or December, where he was kind of being geeked out by them. I don't know about that, but one way or the other, this has kind of been one of those like unexpected plot lines or stories in AEW that I've actually found myself gotten really drawn into here. It's not necessarily the position that I would have imagined MJF to be, you know, kind of on his kind of, you know, again, like the Bucks kind of trying to rehab things, but it's working for him. And this idea of kind of, okay, giving him this job or this mission over the next month or so of just presumably having to just like do run-ins or just mangle not just jobbers, because we've already seen, right, that that the Hurt Syndicate in their tag matches, you know, you can't just beat up tomato cans and earn their respect. So it's given MJF a really real clear mission statement over the next month or two.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that when he came out, like, he was getting like audible MJF chants, like babyface reaction to him as well. And this is a story like the audiences have latched on to. I think they like the way they've drawn this out, so that, as I've said, like, the day that Lashley puts his thumb up, that's gonna be a gigantic pop for them to build to. So you know, it's continuing. I think for everyone involved in this is taking care of several key acts that are on the show, and it is something that the audience seems to be interested in, the week-to-week progression of that they've kind of fell into here. Nick Wayne and Jay Lethal for the ROH World Television Championship. Nick Wayne's music, that I know Bruce was very disappointed when it immediately got cut off by Christian Cage's, and they walk out to the ring. Match didn't have like a ton of heat to it. Lethal lands a suicide dive, but then it runs into a Hurricane Rana on the floor. And then they got into some really nice sequences here. Lethal combination is hit after the break. Wayne then stops him on the turnbuckle and gets sent down. And as Lethal goes for his elbow off the top, he lands in a crucifix by Wayne for a two count, then goes for the Lethal injection. Wayne rolls him up for a schoolboy for a two count, and then Lethal is sent into the buckle, hit with the roundhouse kick and a fisherman buster in 9 minutes and 17 seconds. Cage comes in and he's got the television title, but he puts it around the waist of Nick Wayne and applauds him as well. So I don't know if this is the last we see of Nick Wayne before he goes off to the tournament, but it's probably, if not this, then probably next week. And I think this might be it for him for the tournament, if he's got to head over there earlier.
It really could be. So yeah, I mean, and if it is the case, I think they did a good job of kind of like letting you know where things with he and Christian stand. In terms of the match itself, kind of like the Yamashita match, started off a little bit cold, I think, just because you know, like this was a crowd that obviously, like we said, they were there for night and everything like that. But if it was somebody coming in from outside like Yamashita or somebody who's been off of television like Lethal for a few months, they weren't just going to like lose their mind just because, you know, wrestling's happening in front of them. But they did, I think, by the end of this, you know, kind of draw enough people into it. I don't know if it's actually coming from Christian or not, but the sort of things in ring that Christian has always been praised for by diehard fans in terms of like the timing and pacing of his matches and kind of when to do kind of technical work versus high spots and things like that. I think you're beginning to see those things in Wayne's matches, which were not there a year and a half ago. I'm not saying that, you know, he's literally learning these things from Christian or not, but it's just nice to see his development there. I don't know if you were able to hear the break audio or not, but during the break, Taz was bearing the idea of weight class.
Yes.
In New Japan, you know, if you can kick someone's ass, it doesn't matter what your height or weight is. And Excalibur tells him, I don't take it up with the International Wrestling Grand Prix, man.
Oh, it was very good. Taz was like biting his tongue. He's like, I don't really want to like share my views on this, but it's like, I completely hate the separation of heavyweights and junior heavyweights. It's bullshit. Another note I got, and I was not watching the TSN feed, but I saw that for some of the picture and picture breaks, there were ads for Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling for their show coming up in Toronto on May 10th. So, a smart ad buy for Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling on tonight's show.
I also like the fact that it was Christian strapping Nick up afterwards and giving the slow collapse. And like the segment that we saw earlier, this is a slight adjustment from what we saw before with the dynamic between him and Luchasaurus, right? Where it's me, I'm the champion, right? You know, and it was always
carrying the belt. Yeah.
Yeah. Here, it's not so much like the, you know, I'm a delusional, over the hill, midlife crisis divorce guy. He's more like just super toxic hockey dad, right? Who is just going to bully his son, or, you know, a Fritz von Erich type who's just going to bully his son into doing all of the things that he could or could not do in his own time. And that, like, I don't know, it's just a little bit of an adjustment, but it's one that feels a little bit more realistic to me.
What do you see as the trajectory of this patriarchy post Best of the Super Juniors? Like, is this like something that's winding down if you see Christian getting tied up with a returning Adam Copeland, or do you think that they will pick this up? Because it does feel like, you know, this group, like, is this kind of the extent, like Nick Wayne could return and he's now the leader of this group.
I think you could do that depending on what the business, on what the timeline for Luchasaurus's return is. I haven't seen an update about him in quite a while. I think we're probably going to, you know, kind of tensions boiling over. We have the Wayne Christian match that sends Christian packing for, and if you want to really, you know, like kind of have Wayne overdo it and just, you know, completely try to kind of stay heel in absolutely destroying Christian. So there is a little bit of sympathy for him when we do get him and Copeland coming back. I, you know, if we talk about people on the bench and whatnot, again, we don't exactly know what Copeland's timeline for return is, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for Christian to just be away for 2 or 3 months while you have Wayne either solo or now as the de facto head of the patriarchy, you know, in an Oedipal killing of your own father and claiming the throne and whatnot sort of position. We'll see if he does that or decides to go solo.
Well, the Leafs Senators series, game 6 is tomorrow night, meaning game 7 is going to happen on Saturday, which means the Leafs will be eliminated by Sunday. And then I feel Adam Copeland is good to return anytime after the Sens make
the most probable
comeback I could have called from the beginning of this.
Absolutely.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair. Every style, every home.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Collision is airing on TBS this Saturday instead of TNT. All they've announced is Tony Storm against Lady Frost in another eliminator and Josh Alexander against Brody King. So that is happening on Saturday. And that takes us to our main event, Kyle Fletcher and Hangman Page in the semifinal of the Owen Hart Cup, the winner advancing to face Will Ospreay. And right at the beginning of this, Don Callis is on commentary and Taz seemed so exceptionally annoyed with him at calling him out for his cliche heel lines. He's like, you've been in this business for what, 75 years? Don't you have any better material than that? He seemed legitimately just off on Callis. So Fletcher gets thrown into the timekeeper's area, and then he is thrown upside down into a barricade. And when we see his lower back, it has been sliced open and is going to look like hell tomorrow. This just looked like one of those wounds that is going to look terrible because he just was bleeding from his lower back for 95% of this match.
Yeah, no, it was just a fantastic accidental, you know, sort of blood. I not to be a sicko or anything like that, but like when you have a wound like that, that is very clearly not on the forehead or whatever it is, it just, even if it's not as much blood or even if the cut isn't deeper, just the scraping, the abrasion, right? Like it just gets that sense of realness across.
Think about the plane ride this guy's going to have.
That's
the killer. Yeah. So the crowd, I mean, they were very much behind Paige and they got a lot of time for this match. Some great stuff here. They go on to they fight on the barricade. This is after Kyle hits a brainbuster on the edge of the apron, and then they manage to balance themselves on the barricade, and Paige does a backflip off the barricade, lifting Kyle when he lands into a tombstone. They go through a second commercial break. Fletcher is back with a half and half and then runs into a Liger bomb, which Paige gets for a two count. Powerbomb gets blocked and Paige hits the Deadeye. Kyle kicks out of that. So we're just getting into all these near falls here. Last ride powerbomb by Fletcher for a two count. And Fletcher stops the first buckshot attempt. He is hit with the Deadeye on the edge of the apron. Paige connects with the Orihara and rolls Kyle into the ring. But the buckshot gets stopped as Kyle shoves the referee away, kicks Paige low, and then hits a brainbuster. This was the most awesome near fall because you just felt like this Virginia crowd, it was like they just felt, okay, Hangman's got to win this, but they got this crowd to bite so much on this near fall, and it was really, really well done.
In doing my prep for this before the match started, you know, my note off of the top was just like, your job here is to make me believe for 1 second that Kyle Fletcher is going to win this match, because I think a lot of us going into this looked at the setup and thought, okay, we're not going back to Fletcher Ospreay. They've just had that incredible trilogy, let that life out for a while there. And oh my God, yeah, that was not just one half a second. That was 5 or 6 seconds of completely biting on that. Also, the fact that this was the exact finish that Fletcher used to beat Okada in the Continental Classic a few months ago. right. was just, you know, he had, I loved his run in the C2 this last while. So yeah, completely 100% bid on this.
This is my favorite spot in the whole match. I just thought it was so well done. And they have this lariat battle on the turnbuckle. Kyle goes down and out of the corner, Hangman flips over into a makeshift buckshot lariat and then hits the proper version from the edge into the ring and gets the win over Kyle Fletcher. Spectacular match and setting up what should be a huge match with Will Ospreay and Hangman Page for a double or nothing, which is going to cap off, I think, has been the best Owen tournament. Like this men's tournament has been just incredible this year. And I think you're going to have like a legitimate match of the year contender with Hangman and Ospreay on a pay-per-view. And I think, like, again, like we talked about the women, I think a very viable argument of who you go with in that match for the all-in main event.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I kind of feel like we had our dessert at the beginning of this episode in this very fun, big, bright, cartoony, sort of colorful, Reseda showcase match off of the top. And then we got our real meat and potatoes, or your veggie stew and rice, whatever it is, you know, this real like stick to your ribs sort of match that was slow burning with some fantastic peaks at just the right time. That is the sort of match, whether it's, you know, more, you know, traditional or deathmatch sort of stuff, that's kind of the pace that I kind of feel like Hangman Page really excels at. And Fletcher completely met him at that. And I love the contrast, not just between this match and the one off the top, but the difference between this match and the Ospreay-Takeshita match from 2 weeks back, right? The other semi, right? Just both absolute, you know, 4.5, 5-star, whatever you want to say, sorts of matches, but very, very different from one another in terms of their in terms of their style, in terms of their look. There's a lot. I mean, we've already talked Fletcher to death and throwing roses at him, but there's a lot to like about Page's presentation right now, whether he wins or loses the Owen. I think, sure, it's an open question. I like that we're not only kind of siloing him off in this will they, won't they bury the hatchet thing with Swerve. I think that AEW is at its best when your major players are not just siloed off and married into one feud for 4 months. And it really feels like there's a lot of fluidity drawing upon history, a lot of irons in the fire at the top of the card, as a main event like this sort of indicates. The fact that this was leading towards an Ospreay match kind of fell to the back of my head, you know, when I was watching this and I was thinking about it just in terms of what I like about Hangman's matches, what I like about Fletcher's matches, and again, buying on that absolutely fantastic false finish.
Yeah, I mean, this, are you one that gives some kind of credence that, you know, we talk about sort of like this general sentiment of like a lot of negativity towards AEW creative towards kind of the back half of last year. And it seems a lot of that has been, it's not like the Death Riders are gone from anything, but it doesn't seem to be the same level of vitriol that people have had. And, you know, one of the theories has just been like for Tony Khan, this is outside of football season. And it feels like this is like the most cohesive booking we have had in AEW in some time. And I think a portion of that is you've got this mega show for July and you can kind of work backwards for, and it feels like they have like your upper plan, like most of, like I would say most of your key matches for All In are probably penciled in and barring any injuries, you're working backwards, but it feels like you're on a pathway to a big show and they've got this all mapped out and this tournament that has felt very consequential. And yeah, like these characters that can weave in and out of various feuds and lean on their history.
Yeah. And, you know, if we talk about, you know, when a lot of people kind of talk about the glory days, you know, of AEW 2021 or 2022, whatever you want to sort of say, I think part of it was the fact that, like, look, we can relitigate 2019 AEW if you want and what was good and what wasn't about it. But I think one of the things that they had to draw upon there was that history. What, you know, was the fact that each of these wrestlers, their feuds, their matches were things that could be called back, could be referred to. Did not need to be beating you over the head with it. Like, you absolutely don't need to know that is how, you know, Fletcher defeated Okada a few months ago in order to have enjoyed this match. But if you did, cool. That's great. That's a fun little note for you there, right? So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into the whole, you know, sort of, I've chatted a little bit with it, with Brandon about it and whatnot, you know, the question of, you know, should booking duties be delegated or handed off to Danielson, Chris Hero, whoever we want to sort of draft or mention there. But yeah, I do agree. There's this real sort of sense of focus. There's this real sense of continuity. There's the sense that if you are somebody who watches the product carefully and knows its history, you're getting those rewards in addition to, like you said, very, very clear, logical paths towards these big cards and big matches. But again, also not sort of having everything feeling so telegraphed and so obvious that you cannot have somebody deke around and have call back to a previous feud for a month or two, that you cannot possibly, like we said, you know, bite on the fact that, oh, geez, maybe they are going to go with Fletcher, which is a really, really nice spot to be in, I think, creatively right now.
So the last thing, the match went 23 minutes and 25 seconds. So between that and the eight man, you got pretty much 50 minutes of wrestling on a 2-hour show, like 50, pretty solid,
pretty top tier,
pro wrestling with three matches in between there too. So I thought this really continued what's been a really great streak of Dynamites for AEW as they inch towards the pay-per-view in a couple of weeks' time. And now you do have the two finals set up that hopefully these next few weeks, it's kind of just building up the arguments for both sides. And I think for both sets of finals, you have the fan interest in seeing it can go either way in both the men's and women's tournaments. So I think the next few weeks is just really hitting these finals that much harder.
Yeah, like I said, I really want to see Hayter kind of get some time and get some focus to kind of have her feel slightly more credible going in. But yeah, apart from that, you know, I think this was a better episode than last week's very, very good one. Didn't quite get to that one, you know, a couple of weeks ago, but that was fantastic.
Few will.
Yes, yeah, and just really solid advancement of pretty much every single program involved here. Like we said, bookended by two fantastic but very different matches, which is, again, that sense of variety is also something that I associate with classic AEW.
All right. Well, we are going to say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube channel. However, on the other side, we're continuing on the Post Wrestling Cafe. The XL edition continues. We're going to be taking some feedback, and then we're going to be chatting about Eddie Gilbert and the episode of Dark Side of the Ring that aired on Tuesday night. So thanks to everybody for joining us on the free channel. To go check out more, postwrestlingcafe.com. And let's get in a plug, Bruce, for all that you do out there.
Oh.
For all the freeloaders, as WH likes to coin them.
Absolutely, yeah. If this was not enough to entice you into joining the cafe, midday on Sunday, Karen and I will have a condensed review of both nights of Wrestling Dontaku, featuring, as we said off the top, Uemura versus Tsuji, Callum Newman versus Goto, and Naito's last New Japan matches, at least for now. And then the weekend after that, you can stick around on the cafe when we will have a review of New Japan's Resurgence show in Ontario, California. Also, I should say here that the latest episode of Postmarks came out on the cafe feed last weekend, in which David and I chatted with Mark Lafiere, which accidentally, kind of by happenstance, had a fair amount of the moment talk about wrestling and politics, which just kind of kismet the fact that show came out the weekend of the election.
Brilliant booking on your parts. So congratulations on that. We will now continue as we head on over to forum.postwrestling.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.